On today's podcast, I'll talk about Miami's win in Boston, Tatum's fourth quarter, what really happened, and a question about Jimmy, or an observation that I don't know that we've really talked about before. Bob Ryan will talk some playoffs with us as well. We've got life advice, a little travel pod, cheeseburger style, not sure. All right, but we do have this announcement. We're headed back to the East Coast for a live show in New York City right before the NBA draft. We'll be at the Gramercy Theater on Tuesday, June 20th, and you can grab your tickets now at universe.com/Russillo23. That's universe.com/Russillo23. Come on out. We'll preview the draft. That's only going to be a couple days away. We've got a great guest lined up. And of course, we're going to do some live life advice. Again, Gramercy Theater in New York City on Tuesday, June 20th. You can get your tickets at universe.com/Russillo23. Grab your tickets while they are available. It's the Ryan Russillo podcast presented by FanDuel. Take a shot at betting the NBA with FanDuel, America's number one sportsbook. Right now, you can check out the new and improved Parlay Hub. Filter by odds, sport, and bet type to easily find the most popular parlays and same-game parlays all on one page. Plus, start betting the Explore page and the Pulse and bet live same-game parlays for every NBA game. So download the app today and bet with FanDuel, official partner of the NBA. The Ringer is committed to responsible gaming. Please visit rg-help.com to learn more about the resources and helplines available. And listen to the end of the episode for additional details. Must be 21 and older and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit rg-help.com. This episode is brought to you by Arby's. I remember my first visit to Arby's. I went with my grandfather, fresh out of WWII. I reached for his hand. He declined my grasp. I was worried about the options. I said, I know they dominate the roast beef world, but is there going to be anything for me? And here's the thing. There is. Well, now is the chance to try Arby's and find your favorite sandwich. With a wide range of options, see for yourself that Arby's sells more than roast beef. Plus, for a limited time, Arby's rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April, online only. Simply join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today. Order on the app or Arby's.com. Miami Heat going to Boston and take down the Celtics. Game one, up in the series. What else is new? The Heat have now won game one openers on the road in three series in a row at Milwaukee, at New York, at Boston. They're the fifth team to ever do it in NBA history. The 99 Knicks, who had a much different situation with a shortened season. We've been over that before. They were only six games behind the one seed, lost to the Spurs in the finals. And then the 81 Rockets, if you go back and look at how weird that was for the Rockets for a couple of years. And then they lost in the finals. So Miami continues to do the impossible. And yes, I picked Boston. I picked Boston because I figured they would slowly figure this out. And I just think the team is better. And Miami is challenging all of those things. They continue to challenge it. So I'm going to do a bunch of Jimmy Butler stuff here at the end and present a theory on Jimmy Butler that feels almost impossible to do that he's accomplishing. He's doing something right now that I actually think is impossible. Before we do that, I want to run through the fourth quarter for Jason Tatum. It was Miami shooting. It was a shot making. I even thought there were some stretches defensively where it looked like Boston was going to be fine in the second quarter when Boston went on a little bit of a lead. I was like, okay, this is normal. And then Miami scores 46 points in the third quarter. And while it was happening, because it felt like it happened with such of a flow and there was no Missoula timeout, which people are obviously very upset about, which I would agree with on that one. At some point, just break it up. 46 points in a quarter for the Heat is a playoff record. And as it was happening, you were like, wait, how many did they score? And then you go back, you're like, look real quick. I also, by the way, had a weird situation at the hotel room where, of course, my TV went out on a few channels, and one of those channels was TNT. So I had to watch it on the feed because I couldn't log in somehow. So I watched the all, not all 22, but I watched the all 10. So I'm behind the basket watching. And in a way, it actually gives you some good perspective on how teams do stuff and how they want to attack. There's all Nat sound. Although when Marcus Smart looks like he's injured and going to the tunnel, they kept the camera on Marcus Smart and I missed like three possessions. So that was awesome. But part of the talking points for this morning, Tatum, no field goal attempts in the fourth quarter. Now, when you hear that, you think a lot of things, right? Especially if you didn't watch the game. You're like, wait, this dude?
Thought we just got through this. Remember the 1-for-24 combined first half start against Philadelphia in games, what was it, 4, 5, and 6? Like, that's impossible. 1-for-24, like, how do you do that? He closes out Philadelphia in game 6 with hot shooting, then carries it over and has the best score in game 7 in playoff history. So you're like, okay, things feel good. Then you hear that, right? And if you weren't watching closely, and there's things that I miss depending on what I'm looking for, but if you weren't watching closely, you might go like, wait, Tatum had 0 field goal attempts in the fourth quarter? That seems bad. Was he not up for it? Was the Russillo guy a little more hardened? Is he going to crush him for it? Because that happens all the time. So I went back and looked at it again, and guess what? That's a little misleading. Now, the fourth quarter was bad, and he was bad, but we'll get to it. All right, 806, he checks back in. It's 108-100. They push it in transition off a miss. Tatum's behind the play. White pulls a three. Tatum wasn't even in the possession. That makes it 108-103. At 110-103, Brown misses a three. Tatum was on the other side, not in the play. Next possession, Jaylen Brown, an early turnover. It was so early into the shot clock that Tatum was never going to have the ball. So there's three plays there where he doesn't look like he's involved in the play as he subbed back in, but two of them, he was just never going to be in the play to begin with. All right, 112, to make it 112-105, they were running this action on the left side where Tatum was setting a screen for Smart, and they were hoping to get something off of that, and they didn't. And then the announcers are even starting to talk about it because I watched it again this morning. But at this point, Tatum actually was basically just like, look, I need the ball, drives, get free throws. See, that's the thing with field goal attempts. They don't count when you're fouled and you go ahead and take free throws. So that makes it 112-105. Then Tatum loses the basketball. Jaylen Brown recovers the loose ball like a fumble in the paint. They score a layup. It's now 114-107 Miami. Next possession, Tatum goes quick baseline drive, gets fouled, gets free throws again. So he's actually attacking a little bit more than the people today would tell you that he wasn't doing anything in the fourth quarter. That makes it 114-109. Tatum sets a ball screen, but he doesn't really set it on this one for Smart. He slips it to go one-on-one against Caleb Martin, but then Smart passes it over to Brown, who misses a three. So on that one, you could say, hey, they should have got it to him. He could have been, really, with the summary that I'm going to get to here, is there's only a couple of possessions where you're like, okay, you should have gotten it to him there, and then it would have felt like you were completely forcing the issue to him in the fourth quarter. All right, Jaylen drives hard, passes it out to Horford. Horford misses a three. Tatum is on the other side. There's an offensive rebound. Horford gets it again, throws it to Tatum, but it's an awful pass, and this is where Jimmy Butler turns into Ed Reed and starts picking off all these passes in the middle of the floor. You want to know why? Butler is smart, and he's good, and he's playing the passing lanes. Collectively, from this point on, the Celtics passing was atrocious. The next play for Boston, it's still 114-109. I thought this was the play of the game. Tatum gets switched onto Max Strus. Strus has got him one-on-one at the top of the key, and Strus locked him up on this possession. Tatum couldn't get by him, couldn't get free for a three, which is very rare. I mean, Tatum's very, we just had Larry Nance Jr. on about this one. Like, if Tatum wants to get that separation because he's comfortable stepping back or fading away, even leaning back a little on threes, it's just a really tough shot to deal with. And Strus didn't give him a driving angle, stayed upright, stayed in front of him, didn't foul, didn't reach, and then still got to the point where Tatum didn't really know how he wanted to get the shot off. So guess what Tatum does? Theme here, awful pass to the middle of the floor for Jaylen Brown, stolen by Jimmy Butler. All right. At this point, Jimmy Butler's going to be like, hey, do these guys suck? What's going on here? It's 114-108. Brogdon drives, gets free throws. It's 114-109, excuse me. Brogdon makes 1 of 2 free throws. So it's still a 4-point game. Okay. So 117-110, Tatum decides he's going to start picking up the aggression here, but he gets stuck on the left side. The play was absolutely for him, and he travels. He just travels on the baseline, all right? That's not a lack of shooting. That's just a bad turnover. Brogdon drives. Next possession. Al Horford, offensive rebound, kicks it out to Tatum. Tatum travels again. Didn't know what he wanted to do. He was behind the three-point line, kind of thought he wanted to take a three, decided to change his mind, He lifted both feet. I looked at it again this morning. Both feet were off the ground. It's a travel. It's the right call. It's a bad turnover. Another one for him. Smart layup makes it 120-112 Miami. Then Tatum goes to drive versus three guys. Two collapse on him. He gets fouled. I thought it was a bad foul call. More free throws, kind of a bailout. Hits two more free throws. So the box score says zero field goal attempts in the fourth quarter for Tatum. What really happened here was the six free throws, two travels that were terrible. He had a bad pass to Butler, so it's kind of three turnovers there. He also lost the ball that was recovered by Jaylen Brown in the layup, so you could argue it's four turnovers. Horford was trying to pass back to him one. That was another turnover. So this wasn't really about him being out of the offense. It's actually worse. He was in the offense more than people realize. He just was really bad. So let's talk about turnover rates. Of the 16 playoff teams, the Celtics are the fourth worst in turnover rate in the fourth quarter. That is bad. Let's look at Tatum and Jaylen Brown in the fourth quarter. Turnover ratio out of 100 possessions. Tatum's at 12.2. Jaylen Brown's at 13.5. Actually not terrible, okay, even though the team collectively is turning the ball over a lot. We saw it against Atlanta. We saw it against Philly. And you saw it last night. If Miami is going to shoot the way they shot and Butler's going to have those moments and you're going to turn the ball over for him and make it that easy, you're going to lose the series and Miami's going to be playing for an NBA title. All right. So as I look at the Jaylen and Tatum fourth quarter turnover rates, although not like alarming off the charts bad, there's other really good players that have some that are worse, that are other players that are better than them. It's not great. It's not the end of the world. The difference here, though, is Jimmy Butler in the playoffs. This is a staggering number. His turnover ratio per 100 possessions is 4%. Four times out of 100, he's turning the basketball over. That is taking care of the ball. Let's stay on Jimmy Butler and ask a big question here. All right, so if we keep with some of the numbers here, per 100 possessions for his team during the regular season, Butler's averaging 34 points. In the playoffs, it's over 39 points. That's fourth of any player in the playoffs right now. Behind Jokic, he's good. Anthony Edwards, love him. And Booker, who was like off the charts. All right, Butler's fourth. And that's after actually not making any threes in the second round, which I was like, is he kind of spent maybe? Sneaky tired a little bit? Nope. His usage rate in the regular season hovers around 25. In the playoffs, it's like 31. Which is a lot. When you're north of 30, that's a high usage percentage. And yet, he becomes more efficient. That's not supposed to happen. That's like the Steph Curry stuff early on where it's like, okay, well, look, his shooting numbers are absurd, but if he has more volume, eventually he's going to fall off a little bit. And then Curry had this year where it's like he actually became more efficient with even more volume, which is a really special neighborhood to be in. And Butler is actually doing it during the playoffs. Like, I don't like the MJ stuff for anyone, but what he did last night's like, if you're not going to let anyone have any moment that's compared to what Jordan would do during these playoff games where he would just take over. Again, I think the steals Celtics made it really easy for him, but he's also smart enough to be in the passing lane, already covered. If he's not allowed to at least have the picture-in-picture 1980s high school yearbook silhouette thing with Jordan in the background and then Butler sweaty in the foreground. Like, then who is? Again, I'm not calling him Jordan, but like, this is some real Jordan shit we're seeing here because this is what he did, kids. If you go back and watch it, if you looked at the Heat shot chart, put it side by side with Boston, you'd think you'd be like, all right, don't give me the score. Here are the shot charts. Look at Boston's, look at Miami's. Who won? You'd be like, oh, Boston. And they didn't. Because this is what's happening here. Michael Pina of The Ringer, great tweet last night. Miami shot quality around 45%, right? Tracking data, how open are you? How many were contested? What kind of shots were you actually taking? All that kind of stuff. Like, their shot quality wasn't off the charts last night. It was less than 45%. The problem for the Celtics is the effective field goal percentage was like 63%. So it was plus 18 better than like what you would have thought. And the crazy thing is they already outdid that in game one against Milwaukee. So like some real stuff's happening here as they continue to win on the road. But I want to finish with this. Well, let me finish with this also. It's game one. I mean, look, we saw the Clippers win game one against Phoenix. We saw the Warriors lose game one against Sacramento. I actually really was impressed with LA hanging in that game one in Denver, to be honest with you, because it started really bad. And even though I think every team kind of makes up some space in a basketball game, I don't think there's many teams that would have responded as well as the Lakers did in Denver, considering how that game started. So there's other teams that have won game one that ended up going ahead and winning the series. Again, Miami's a perfect example of that. But think about who Butler's becoming. He is a player without rings becoming way more popular than players with rings. He is somebody that somehow is in a different category. And this isn't a knock. It's not a criticism. It's a compliment because of how rare it is. Jimmy Butler doesn't get shit that guys with rings get. I didn't even think that was possible until I started thinking about it this morning. There's more dudes dogging Kevin Durant with two rings, and I get why, than there would ever be for Jimmy Butler. And that's the Jimmy Butler category. I don't think there's younger players, fine. I don't think there's any player that's been around as long as Jimmy Butler and has one finals appearance where I didn't really think they had much of a chance to beat the Lakers a few years ago, and it's all okay. Because that's how special it is and how great this Miami story is, considering how we look at their roster, certainly how I look at their roster, and I think how non-Heat fans look at their roster. To have this high of approval rating without the history that we demand of the other stars is a pretty remarkable feat on top of everything else he's doing every night. This NBA playoffs, you can get in on the action right from the first tip with FanDuel. Right now, all customers get a no-sweat same-game parlay every weekend when you bet the NBA playoffs. That's right. Just place a 3-plus leg same-game parlay or same-game parlay plus on any NBA playoff game, and you'll get bonus bets back even if you don't win. All right. So there's a play here that I've been thinking about based on the adjustment with the Rui Hachimura and Anthony Davis roaming. I imagine they'll probably go with more of that, but I also imagine Jokic will be more ready for it, and Aaron Gordon maybe won't be positioned standing at the baseline the entire time, which clogs some things up. So because of all of that, I'm going to go Jamal Murray under 31.5 and Aaron Gordon over 15.5. So feel free to use that as you will by adding them up. All right, FanDuel has great promotions every day and a safe and secure app that pays you instantly when you win. There's no better place to bet all of the playoff action than America's number one sportsbook. Visit FanDuel.com/Ryan, R-Y-E-N, and get a no-sweat same-game parlay every weekend of the NBA playoffs. That's FanDuel.com/Ryan, FanDuel, official sports betting partner of the NBA. Must be 21 or older in select states. First online real money wager only. $10 deposit required. Refund issued with non-withdrawable bonus bets. Expire 14 days. Restrictions apply. See full terms at FanDuel.com/sportsbook. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit FanDuel.com/RG. Colorado, Iowa, Michigan, New Jersey, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Illinois, Tennessee, Virginia. 1-800-NEXT-STEP or text NEXTSTEP to 53342 in Arizona. 1-800-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org/chat in Connecticut. 1-800-9WITH-IT, Indiana. 1-800-522-4700 or visit ksgamblinghelp.com in Kansas. 1-877-770-STOP. In Louisiana, call 1-800-327-5050 or visit mahelpline.org/problemgambling. In Massachusetts, visit mdgamblinghelp.org. In Maryland, 1-877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY to 467-389 in New York, 1-800-522-4700 in Wyoming, or visit 1-800-GAMBLER.net in West Virginia. This episode is supported by State Farm. So look, a little rock hit your dude's windshield on the highway. And at first you're like, what is that? I'm like, oh, it's just a little mark. Nope. Now by the end of the ride, it's a big crack. And it had been a while. So I check out the State Farm app. I go, hey, this is what happened. And the funny thing is I was like, do I want to go app first or do I call? Old school guy, probably should call. It's like, let's check out the app. Not only did it take a minute to get done, they set up the glass replacement. They told me the estimate ahead of time, said, you want to go ahead with it? And I was like, now I understand. It's all in front of me, all done. I don't even have to talk to anybody. That's how efficient the insurance game has become. But really, the only words you need to remember are, like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. State Farm has options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, just like I did. And even reach a real person when you need to talk to somebody. The app was so good, I didn't even need to do that. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Learn more at statefarm.com. The legendary Bob Ryan joins us. We're going to talk some basketball, but I think we'll start in his hometown last night. What did you make of the start of this series, Miami's win in Boston, game one?
Before the season started, I said that this team, though talented, was annoying. They have lapses, and now I'm there's no reason to change that. It's been the same scenario all year, and through the playoffs. I'm not panicking or giving up. This is who they are. They have these lapses, and that's an unforgivable third period. Give up 46 points. Period. That's just not laudable. It's awful. How about the two last third periods? They go from 33-10 up to 46-25 down. And I'm saying that they're going to make their fans work for this. You know, I'm not, this is just their nature. And it's obviously it's not going to change. They may stumble their way to a 2023 championship, but it won't be pretty.
What do you think that is? How do you think that happens?
I don't know. I mean, you think how many times do they have to learn their lesson? This team has a history over the last couple of years of colossal lead blowing and let down games now coming off that high on Sunday. And you think that and the way they play defense in that third quarter, you think they would understand, especially against a tough minded team such as the Heat. And who they publicly profess to have respect for, but I don't know. And then of course we have the coaching issue, which I have tried to support, you know, downplay, but which last night in that third quarter, to not call one time out in that period is it's not forgivable. And then I'd like to know where the assistants are to say, Joe, wake up. Was Brad running down from the stands and saying, Hey, you got to call a timeout. The spirit of Red must be going out of its mind up there in the great cigar smoker's home in the sky. Come on, Joe, what is that all about? And now I am concerned. And 24 hours ago, I wouldn't have expressed this concern, but that really bothered me.
Where are you with Missoula? Because I know your buddy Simmons here. I don't know. I think it's almost like the job. If you're passionate about this team, you're going to find things that you have problems with. But you've seen it now for a year. What do you think?
I want to give him the benefit of the doubt for one very simple reason. Brad Stevens hired him. Brad Stevens is no dummy. Brad Stevens had faith in this guy. Brad Stevens was willing to turn the keys of the car over to this guy, and that I'm impressed with that. And there's been ups and downs this year, but I thought that things were getting better, and certainly I felt good after Sunday. And but this timeout thing, this quirk of his, we thought that he had gotten out of that. That was a big issue in the beginning of the season. And then as time went on, that he actually started to call some more conventional times out. But this thing, this is bothersome. But they want to play for him, supposedly. We know that Jason Tatum is his biggest booster and so forth. I know he's not a dumb guy. I mean, obviously, and there's a reason for why he's going at age 34 up the ranks so quickly. But still, they're going to be outcoached in this series. But then again, almost anybody in the left is going to be outcoached by Eric Spoelstra. We accepted that. But one thing here, though, and we're talking about Joe, I understand. I won't jump ahead of the game. So, all right, I'll stop right here.
Okay. All right. Let's go to the Heat side.
I have something to say, but I'm waiting, to get asked. It's simply we, and I'm guilty at times too, expect too much out of any team at any time. In other words, there are going to be lapses. Nobody's perfect. No one has ever swept their way through the NBA. Through the finals. One team came close. The 83 Sixers of Moses Malone had the greatest rampage through the finals to it. And that. No one's ever, you're going to lose games. You're going to, as a rule, you're not going to sweep very often. They're not common, and they're certainly not common deep into the playoffs. And I accept that there's going to be ups and downs. And in the end, you hope that the better team, you know, wins if it's all fair and square. And that's fine. And the Celtics still have plenty of time, obviously, to dig out from the hole. They're getting used to this. They went through this kind of scenario last year. They went through it in the Philadelphia series, losing game one, and they certainly can rebound and they can win anywhere. We know they can win in Miami, they can win in Mars, they can win anywhere, and that's fine. But why they put their fans through this and their coach and their owner and their, I don't know. That third quarter is just not forgivable.
Okay, let's talk about the Heat side of this, because the Butler story, I would say, with Jokic, I mean, there's a couple other things we could pick from, but he is building towards being the story of the playoffs. And I know anytime there's some of the revered names come up, including one guy with the initials MJ here, my first instinct is to like recoil, be like, wait, that, you can't do that. But what he's doing in these moments and taking over some of the stuff. I think they made the steals kind of easy for him last night, but like, there's just not many people that actually do this. And it's just a different profile, because throughout the regular season, he's never talked about as one of the five best players in the league. And yet here he is again, where he's taking over the way a Jordan would take over these playoff games. Like, Jordan didn't have some other version of this that was even beyond, like, what Butler is doing is all-time stuff.
You are correct. It's an unusual phenomenon, and it's not like Michael. It's not like Kobe. It's not like Larry. It's not like Magic. This is his own identity. It's his own shtick, his own MO. Only he knows why this happens, or maybe he doesn't even know why it happens. Maybe he just is himself. It's who he is. He's cold-blooded in these circumstances, and he rises to this occasion continually. And you're right. He's not discussed in the upper echelon during the season. There's no reason to put him there. And then when this playoff thing comes, he becomes this other creature. You know, Robert Horry, you know, was a tremendous playoff player. And at this level, he was different, but certainly, you know, we know he's the man with the many rings and clutch baskets and big plays. He wasn't in February. You weren't talking about Robert Horry, but you sure were in April and May. And that's the same here with Jimmy Butler.
Okay, do you have, despite your upbringing, do you have a picture of Spoelstra in your house somewhere?
No, I don't. I have an image in my mind, of course, but no, I do not. I did not know of Eric Spoelstra, until he got the job. Maybe vaguely I knew of some assistant there, but I doubt it. I probably learned about him the same day that everyone else did when he got hired by Pat Riley.
What do you think makes a great coach? I mean, he clearly is the guy. He's the best in the business. He's doing it again. He's proving it, because I still can't get past the roster.
Well, the number one thing is, are they going to buy what you're selling? You got to have something to sell, and they're going to buy it. And how do you get them to buy it? That's the trick. And how about this? I said Casey Jones was Exhibit A. He was not an X and O guy. He was a guy who knew how to win games, and somehow he knew how to appeal to jocks in a way that not everybody could. But certainly you never worry about the X's and O's from him. So there's different attributes, but in the end, can you get them to buy what you're selling?
Yeah, that's a good one, because the Casey Jones part of it felt more like managing. Like, hey, the team's awesome. It's fine. And it can feel a little insulting at times to be like, don't break it. You know, don't break the thing that you have. But
he was the perfect guy for the 85-86 Celtics, who were deep with veterans, stars, Hall of Famers. Any button he pushed was rewarded. The next year, when they were not deep, when they had all kinds of injury problems, when they needed a quote unquote real coach, he couldn't, he was out of his element, and he was never the same again as he was in 85-86. But he was the perfect guy to stay out of the way and just get them to tell him what time the bus leave in 85-86. But he was not the perfect guy for a team afterward. That's the case. I don't want to go, picking on Pearl cases, but he was a rarity that you could succeed at while being as technically uninterested and as unknowledgeable about the league as he was. You can't believe the stuff he didn't know about who the players were.
Wait a minute, really?
If you gave every coach in the league a yellow legal pad and said, you have a minute or two minutes, name as many players in the league as you can, he'd finish last. But when a game started, they wanted to play for him. They're his guys, those guys, that particular group. And the way he acted day in, day out, in his manner, and they didn't put a lot of demands on them, and fine, they were happy to go through the wall for him. But trust me, I followed the most anal guy ever, Bill Fitch. He knew everybody. He knew not only every player in the league, he knew where we were at the high school, where we were at the college, what their kids' names were, who their coaches were. He knew everything. And I got used to that. And then suddenly it was KC who was, I think we're playing tomorrow night at 7:30. Who are we playing?
Well, when you had that team, I think I can understand it. I can understand it a little bit. Who is your least favorite coach?
I didn't dislike any of them. I mean, dislike personally, or there's no reason to dislike any of them, whether it was even Bob McKinnon, Chris Ford. I loved Chris Ford as a person. I would say he was like your next door neighbor who just happened to be the coach of the Boston Celtics. As normal a human being as a coach can be in professional sports, I thought was Chris Ford. Of course, I love Doc. I'm an unrequited Doc syncopin. I love Doc. I didn't have any friction personally with any coaches and of the Celtics. I just, Casey was interesting. I like Casey. You could not like the man, but it was just phenomenal. Style was just so specific to him. Nobody else could pull it off.
Okay. How much joy do you have watching Nikola Jokic? Where would he be on your joy rankings for Bob Ryan all time?
On a 1 to 10, about a 9.
No, but who would be ahead of him?
Obviously I'm a Larry guy. I mean, I'm not going to lie. Obviously I love Larry. I did a book with Larry. I feel not close to Larry now, but certainly I feel that he's somebody I know, and I love watching him play. And I always put it this way. When he came along, which was 10 years into my career of covering the NBA, it was as if I had signed up for an art course, but I wasn't sure who the professor was. I just knew I wanted that course. And then when the professor walked into the first day of class, it was Michelangelo. And that's the way I feel about Larry Bird walking into my basketball life in 1979, because all the things I loved were encompassed in this one man about how to play this game and see this game. And it was love it. It was romance at first sight for me as basketball, and never abated, I'm just so happy that he entered my basketball life as well as my personal life. He'll always be my favorite guy to cover on the court, as opposed to my favorite overall total package of playing and personality and curiosity and wonder and all that. And that's Dave Cowens. There's never been anything like Dave Cowens for a total package of somebody to cover. But in terms of the basketball itself, Larry Bird. But Jokic is, he sees the floor. He's a team oriented. The stuff he does. I mean, the three pointers that he casually tosses in. And I'm just talking about the one that beat the buzzer halftime, which is ridiculous. But just in general terms. He's an absolute pleasure to watch. If you love basketball, you have to love Jokic, unless he's beaten up on your team.
I have another Jokic and some Lakers follow-ups here, but I don't know that I've ever asked you about this. I think I always ask you about a Larry Bird story, but I read Drive years after it came out. Again, the story of my life that Bob wrote with Larry Bird. It came out, 1990?
88,
okay. I guess I got the reprint date here.
Well, that's good.
Okay, so how do you pitch the book idea that everybody wants to do? Now, you could, I'll just make some assumptions here. One is you can't ask Larry right away, but then you also have to kind of outflank other people. You have to work on building that relationship so he eventually picks you. Then he has to pick you to have it be the right time. Can you take us through all the pieces of knowing how to work the relationship enough to know when it's the right time while also not worrying about somebody else getting in front of you?
I'll start with the kind of the semi-conclusion, which is how it came and when it came about, which was at the All-Star game in Chicago in 1987. And we were at a gathering, and he he said to me, I'm ready to do a book. I want you to do it. Period. Simple as that. And I'd like you to do it. And that there was no negotiation. There was no me begging Larry to be the man. He came to me and said, I want you. And I think it was logical. I had the best relationship with Larry. The first time I ever talked to Larry was in the summer of 79 after he had signed. And it was a story for Us magazine. And the interview was going to take place at Bob Wolf's house, which was this agent who was lived around the corner from Larry. Larry had truly Larry bought a house right around the corner from his agent. And it was
smart agent.
Laying down the groundwork, you know. Yeah, he was laying down the groundwork, you know. I'm not going to be at I'm going to keep my house sacred, but you know. Anyway, so we did the interview, and I was covering the team and his rookie year, and you know, interaction. This is the old days when you really had access. You went to practice every day. You went in the locker room before, an hour and a half before. You just sat around and shoot the breeze. You rode on the buses with them. You went on the planes with them. You went out to dinner with them. You went out drinking with them. All those things happened. And he actually told people at the end of the first year, Bob Ryan, he could be a coach. Well, that's crazy. Of course, I did coach at summer league one time, but you know, we hit it off. He respected my basketball intelligence, I guess, and curiosity and love, and we just hit it off. If anybody was going to do a bird book, frankly, in 1987, it should have been me, and it was.
Okay. All right. There's the answer that I wanted. All right. So let's get back to the West then. I've argued, probably the last 2 years when talking about Luka, that if I need a bucket, he might be my first pick of anyone in the entire league. Like if I need ball in the hands, give me a good look, it might be him. And then I started thinking about it watching Jokic again, because I love that game one. I actually feel good about LA even after game one, because I was like, you know what? They came back. Most teams would have gotten destroyed with the way that game started. So I think it was actually some positives in there for the Lakers. But now I'm watching Jokic going like, am I arguing semantics if I say I have one possession? So it's not get me a bucket, but I need the most out of this possession, which ultimately means then Jokic is still the best option of anyone in the league. If you have to maximize a possession, I actually don't think there's anyone better than Jokic in basketball right now.
Well, it's interesting to come the comparison on how they go about it between and Doncic and they each move at their own pace, which is 45. It's not 33 and a third for those people who know what that means. It's not 78 for those people who know what that means. It's 45, and they never change. They never deviate. They can each go anywhere they want to go when they want to go, even though they don't appear to be very quick. I'm not sure. That's an interesting. I never thought about it. Him, Doncic, either one of them, in terms of that necessarily. I still would think that I'm thinking Curry, because he can get any shot off he wants, because he can create space always. He can always create space for himself, no matter where he is, and plus he can go to the basket. But I can tell you the Celtics will tell you that Doncic has beaten him in last second shots more than once. And certainly Jokic can get a shot, but then he can be guarded. You know, you saw Anthony Davis block that shot beautifully the other day. There's a few people that could, you know, deter him a little bit, but for the most part, you'd be pretty safe asking him to be the guy.
Watching LeBron in his 20th year, is there anything left for you? I mean, getting paid. We're both getting paid to talk about this stuff. There's just certain nights where I'm like, okay, here he goes again. Where are you?
Well, I'm a vocal opponent of the 3-point shot, which I honestly and truly feel. And here you go. Ready? It's the worst thing to happen to basketball in my lifetime. It has distorted the game at every level. It has altered the concept of how to play the game that used to be always inside out. Now it's outer in Curry land, and that's the game, and everybody's emulating it. And then talking about 8-year-old kids in, you know, Fond du Lac, Wisconsin, are cracking up threes. And when you see people pass up layups continually to pass to some guy in the corner to clank a three, it does bother me a great deal. The dependence on the three is just, and it is the game. It's not going anywhere. We're closer to a four than we are to abolishing the three. I understand that. It's not the same game that I grew up loving. I don't enjoy it as much. And I still can enjoy it, and it's still important to me, and that's fine. But I'm not going to lie, it isn't the same game, and it's, well, everybody knows it's not the same game. And you either have to either like it or you don't like it. And I don't like it the way it is. So that's the fact. So when we get a player come along like a Jokic that does what he does, although he incorporates the three as part of his game, but it doesn't, it's not his life. That's what, you know, Larry, people wonder. And that's exactly the way Larry treated it 40 years ago. Now, today, of course, he'd be encouraged to take more threes, and he would, and he'd be one of the most devastating three-point shooters. But in his game, he used it strategically when he thought it was a time to do it. And so I understand younger people who have never seen anything else. This is what they know, and that's fine. But I have seen something else, and I like the other game better.
Okay, so back to LeBron. 20 years in, do you think he can pull this off in Denver?
Yes, he can. There's no question he can. I'm a percentage chance guy. So I think that series is, I'll go 70-30, maybe 65-35 Denver percentage chance. But that's, to me, that's a hefty, good possibility. It's not improbable. They have to stay healthy. Davis has to stay on the floor. One of those, and that they need a nightly contribution from, you know, at a high level from one of those role guys. And then, now maybe Hachimura is going to have a whole series. I like him, and you have to like him, I think, and the way he's playing. Reeves is a revelation. I mean, let's face it, this is one of the great shocks of all time. The beginning of this year, I that paid zero, less than zero attention to him. And now, you know, he's a guy you got to honor. It's possible. I think Denver is a better team. I think they ought to win, but I won't be stunned and shocked. It won't be the biggest upset in the history of the league. It'll be a hell of a story, and I know the networks are rooting. I'm sure I'm sure ABC and ESPN and are rooting for it. I'm sure the league would love to see it, to have LeBron in the finals. And, you know, no offense to Denver, but this is a fact. So I'm continually amazed by him and awed by the way he plays the game and what he's doing at this level, at this age. It's extraordinary.
It means a lot to me every time we get the time with you, Bob. So enjoy the game twos, all right? We'll talk again.
Okay, thanks for having me. I appreciate it very much. Bye-bye.
This episode is brought to you by Arby's, the perfect sandwich. Let me think. Buffalo chicken sandwich is done right. Can change your life. I've never been the same in the best way possible when I experienced my first one. Also loving to travel, I've had gyros, also known as gyros. I think if you go to Arby's and you order a gyro, they're not going to judge you. And that's what I like about them. Nice chicken, perfectly sauced, butter lettuce, good body. You know what I'm talking about. And that's what Arby's has. They have more than you may even realize. Get out there and explore. Well, now is the chance to try Arby's and find your favorite sandwich. With a wide range of options, see for yourself that Arby's sells more than roast beef. Plus, for a limited time, Arby's Rewards members get one free sandwich with purchase every week in April online only. Simply join Arby's Rewards and order ahead today. Order on the app or Arby's.com.
This episode is brought to you by Hotels.com. When I went on my last holiday to Cape Town, it was amazing. My friends were there, the weather was phenomenal, and most importantly, the food was fantastic. But one thing I struggled with was finding the right places to stay. You know, all I want is a great bed, a fantastic shower, and breakfast that doesn't end at 8 a.m. I'm on holiday, I'm still sleeping. I also like ease, and the Hotels.com app easily helps me to find a perfect hotel for every trip. Whether you're looking for a family-friendly getaway or a relaxing spa weekend, on the Hotels.com app, you can compare up to 5 hotels side by side. Now, why would you want to do that? So you can see prices, amenities, and star ratings. And best of all, you don't have to switch back and forth between options. See? Ease. So, start planning your next getaway and find your perfect somewhere in the Hotels.com app today.
In Chicago for the NBA Combine. I'll be back in LA tomorrow. Maybe tonight, I'm not sure. But here's the deal. Flew Southwest. Haven't done that in a while. But you want to fly into Midway. You want to get to Chicago before the afternoon traffic. That's the move. I have to remind myself of that anytime I'm in O'Hare or if I land in Chicago after 4 o'clock and you're like, oh, this was a terrible call. Something that hasn't happened to me, I was taking off the old Delta tag off the bag as I checked a bag for Southwest and I was, tearing the old tag away. And a lady came up to me and she was like, I'll take that for you. You know, the crumpled tag. But I put the crumpled tag in my mouth as I went to, like, you know, which I didn't know what I was supposed to do. Well, it was the very end, Kyle. I'm sorry.
Well, you're not planning on handing it to somebody either. I get that.
Oh, you thought you were talking. I thought you were worried about germs, which actually surprised me.
A little worrisome, but yeah.
Wow, thanks. No, I just mean just the optics of, like, here, take this. You want this thing I just had in my mouth? There you go. It's like somebody borrowing a pencil too? That you've just been chewing on. It's like, I don't know. Whatever. Continue.
You want me to wipe my forehead on your neck? Something like that.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
Deb Pelt and I used to do that to each other. Would you rather have Tim Legler just put his neck against your face or all right, so anyway, no, it gets worse, because the woman was like, I'll take that, and I was like, I don't want to give it to you. It's I just had it in my mouth. I was like, I'll deal with it. She's like, I don't care, your mouth has probably been the same place mine has.
Wow. Oh,
man. I was like, hey, it's 7 a.m.
Don't hit me with riddles.
Yeah. Seven. You know, and I'm like, you're right. It was a riddle. Because I was like, what the fuck did that even mean? What does that mean? I was like, was I being hit on or insulted? Like, I don't
even know what the proper response to that is. Even
there was
be.
None.
Yeah.
I just was like, hey,
all right, man. Cool.
Yeah. The answer is you'd be surprised. That's the answer. That's what you got
to
say.
Yeah, but then I got to keep talking to her.
Yeah, yeah.
I did a real, like,
cool. Yeah.
It was just, there was nothing actually said. So anyway, make it here. Go to the combine. I got to tell you, Sanogo, nobody likes him from UConn. He fucking dominated the first day. He kicked everyone's ass. And then Sam Vecenie, who we love on this pod, he was like, here are the standouts. He did like 12 standouts. He didn't even mention them. And then I asked the team, I was like, what do you think? And they're like, come on, dude. I was like, all right. I go, look, I'm not telling you he's going in the first round. All right. But there's something to be said of a guy whose hands and his feet and the way he runs, and he can't be moved. And every time the ball's like up for grabs, it always is his. And he's dirty in like a really good way. When he hits dudes with his off arm to like get position where he's positioning to get an offensive rebound and put back, guys are like crumpled. I don't even know. He might get called for it in the NBA. And I get it. Like, he's an undersized post player. Nobody likes those players anymore. But he was like kicking guys' asses. And I was like, he can't make it into the top 60. Like, this guy, there's no top 60 home for this. And again, it's not like I polled every team. It was just a couple people that I ran into, and everybody looked at me like I had the dumbest idea of all time. And then Vecenie didn't even mention him. Like, at least put him in the standouts because he stood out. Not that he now all of a sudden needs to be, you know, a guy going from pick 30 to 40. So I don't know. Maybe somebody else will like him. We'll see.
Yeah, like Jordan Hawkins is the guy that all the UConn guy that everybody loves. Like, all the Magic fans want Jordan Hawkins with maybe that second pick because he could shoot. But Sanogo is a freaking monster. I just don't know, like, what's the best case scenario? Like, what is he? Is he just like a second unit guy who just dominates other bigs? I don't know.
Yeah, and I definitely have a weird hole in my game for like the super athletic, full energy. Like, I guess I just want the next Kenneth Faried, another Manimal.
Yeah.
And
remember Jeff Adrian at UConn? I love Jeff Adrian.
Love Jeff Adrian. But Jeff Adrian was smaller, I think, even than Sanogo was.
Oh, definitely. But he was a beast.
Yeah. But just seeing Sanogo, like, certain guys not understand how strong he is in the combine, where they'll like go to do something with him and you just go, oh my God, like, this guy, he's the strongest dude playing. He's the strongest dude that's out there. I don't know. We're not going to recap all the combine stuff here a little bit, but I did want to recap the cheeseburger run that I've been on. Yeah. They're known for their cheeseburgers out here, boys. Or their deep dish. I'm just not a deep dish guy. I remember being excited about it the first time I came out here to try it. And then it comes out and they take the slice and the cheese pulls apart and everybody's like, ooh. And then, you know, they put it on your plate and you're like, oh, this first bite, it's like warm cheese. There's some sauce in there and it's like a pastry crust. And you're like, oh, this is good. You're like, isn't this good? And everybody's looking at each other and it's good. And then you like notice that people aren't rushing for the second slice yet, but then you have to and you grab the second slice, and then you're kind of looking around. It's like four people that all are really excited about some actor that they've loved their entire lives being in a movie. And then like 20, 30 minute mark in the movie, one of the persons looks at each other and goes like, does this movie suck? even though you were laughing in the beginning, you're like, oh, this is good or whatever. So I don't come here for the deep dish. It's just not my thing. I don't want to get a huge fight about it. But I went to Trivoli Tavern Monday for a $30 double cheeseburger. I got to tell you, I looked at the menu. I was like, are you fucking serious? And then I took a bite. And I went, okay.
And this is a regular size cheeseburger, or this is like it's $30 for because of like the cheeseburger is perfect, or it's because it's like fucking
got gold
huge.
Flakes on it.
No, it was like, I'll admit, I was like, I'm going to order something else. I was like, I can't spend $30 on this double cheeseburger. And the word was like, no, you have to. So, I'll admit that first bite, I was like, okay, this is insane. But then everybody talks up Al Cheval, which is, you know, I don't really know the mapping of the area, certain areas that have been built up, West Loop, more so now than it was when I first started coming out here. I remember they used to put us up at the Combine, the first days of the Combine, and you were like, dude, are you serious at this hotel? And then eventually, like, the athletes that were on the Combine, I'd be like, where is everybody? And they're like, oh, they're staying in town. You just go like, what happened? I think one year I go, I will pay out of my own pocket to not stay at this hotel. And where this hotel is now is actually kind of the outskirts of like the end of the cooler spot. It's a little bit younger, but you go to Al Cheval, it's all cheeseburger. All right. So the great thing about being by yourself is they're like, oh, there's a 2-hour wait. And I was like, it's just one. They're like, oh, there's an extra spot over there. I'm like, all right, no problem.
The so benefits of solo travel. Let's go.
Yeah, no, it's amazing, especially internationally, like the hottest restaurant ever. You just go like, oh, no one can get in there. Like, we'll see. The thing is when you're doing it internationally, they feel bad for you. I'll never forget eating dinner at this place in Greece where they were just like this. They're like, don't even go over there. Fucking loser. It was some terrible service because they were like, this guy actually wants to sit here by himself out by the water. I was like, yeah, I don't give a shit. All right, so back to the cheeseburgers. You go in, I think Al Cheval, the entire premise would be to have the best version you've ever had of a fast food burger. All right. And I know that In-N-Out is kind of that. And in a way, it is. Fries suck. And
fair.
Yet, when I went here, I had a prime seat. I don't know if you call it the chef's table, it's just the counter. There's a ton of people on the counter. The chefs, by the way, were enormous. So not a lot of room for those dudes back there sweating like crazy. And they're cooking up their cheeseburgers, right? And they throw all the patties, fresh patties down, right? Never frozen. They've got their cheese options. They also broil them a bit. They've got their toasters going above. It's all very efficient. You love the egg station to the right, Kyle.
Big
just
time.
Dudes cracking eggs. And then there's the bacon. So they'll like throw down the patties, then they set them aside, and then it'll be like, okay, let's get the bacon going again. Like, all right, where are we on our bacon patty ratio and the whole thing? And so when you order double, it's actually three patties, cheese on every layer, pickles, onions. They've got their own spread. I'm just a ketchup guy. I know.
Sounds a lot
Sorry.
Like Five Guys so far. I mean,
it's a I'm little kidding. Higher.
Yeah. I'm just kidding. I'm kidding.
I don't know if they'll put that review on the website. Sounds a lot like Five Guys, TBH.
Double the price, yeah.
yeah, it was incredible. Really, really good burger. But I know this is great. I think Trivoli Tavern's burger was actually better. Well, there you go.
All right, it's out there now. Can't take it back.
Yep.
The burger thing is actually fascinating because I think the fast food burger, they have it right. Like when you try to fancy up a burger, it actually gets way worse. Like if you try to do a special bun... Or if you do like a lot of times, like if you just like a huge ass patty, that's actually terrible. Give me like a bunch of little thin ones with cheese layered in. Like I don't want a huge patty. So like when you try to fancy up a burger, I think oftentimes like it backfires. I think like the grimier the burger, just the better. Like I want multiple layers of cheese, multiple layers of meat. I want like whatever that special sauce is, some shredded lettuce, some tomato, and then we're good to go. And like preferably probably a potato bun, but. And that's why I think like all of those, like, you know, whether it's the Five Guys, whether it's the In-N-Out, whether it's the Shake Shack, which I love, like they're just I kind of just would prefer that over like a fancy burger any day of the week.
I gotta be honest, I've had a couple restaurant black and blue burgers, and god damn it, that is an experience. I'll always try a black and blue burger.
Wait,
what are you talking? Black Angus with blue cheese in it?
Well, I mean, they're always called black and blue. Like, yeah, it's just like, you know, it's a burger with blue cheese on it. And black, I guess, is because it's whatever. That's just the name I see at all these restaurants.
Char on the outside.
Sure, yeah. That's a fun way to do a burger. But yeah, I know what you're saying. Like, I wouldn't be like, oh, this place has a regular cheeseburger that's like, you know, it's fucking half a pound or something.
Like, if it's like an inch thick, like, pass. Don't want that. I don't want one patty that's an inch thick. Like, I know, like, sometimes they look at it and they're like, oh, okay, it's, you know, it's raw on the inside. Like, it's cooked perfectly, medium rare, whatever you want. No. I want, like, this. The closer to Smashburger, the better. Like, you get that crispy edge. That's the best. That, to me, is the best burger. Also,
I think,
don't need
I think
bacon
some
on
of
burger.
The some of the Smashburger stuff can go too far with this.
It's running rampant.
Where you're just like, what am I eating here? Just
looks like hash browns.
Burger flake.
Like hash browns.
Yeah.
All right. Like, you can fuck up a smash burger. I'll give it to you. But a well done one, I just think there's nothing better than that.
Well, then you would like both places that I went to because it's the thinner patty, it's multiple patties, and they're trying to make the fanciest fast food burger. And it works. Both places were awesome. So I think I might be cheeseburgered out. We'll see how it goes for the final meal here tonight. I don't think we have anything else, right? Do we have any updates? Kyle, how are you doing? You sound a little, is it the burger topic or you're just a Thursday post-bachelor party? Is this lingering a bit? Have you gone out since?
I have not. Everyone's wondering when I'll be going back to the frolic room. I don't know. Might be today, depending on what time Bill gets his shit together here. So I don't know. We'll see. I was going to say about your Southwest thing. Just before I forget, I'd always walk past those. I got dropped off in Philly and I had to wait for like 3 hours before my flight came back to LA. And I just said, I was like, what am I going to do? I'm so tired. I just paid for like 45 minutes in an airport massage chair. And there was like four people. People were looking at me like I was disgusting. I don't know what it was, but I spent 45 minutes in a massage chair and just kept feeding the meter on that thing. So I was looking at, I had these weird chargers on my car. I was like, what the fuck is that? I was like, oh yeah, that's when you re-upped five times on the massage chair in Detroit airport, actually. It was actually during my layover. So
just need a little self-care.
I was just like, fuck it. I'm going to do it. I'm going to fucking do it. And so it was fine. It didn't quite like, you know, fit to my body, but you know, I made it work.
I got to tell you, the massage chair move in the airport when you feel like shit, people never think it would help. It's actually not a bad call. I remember.
Oh, you've done it too?
No, I haven't done it, but I remember our 10-year reunion, which was a pretty rough one, and everybody was at the Vermont airport. And, you know, guys are recapping everything and kind of going through it all. And it's kind of a weird deal, especially a 10-year, because you're still so young and you miss it pretty bad. But you're getting closer to like reality. And there's also the reality of like a lot of us, you know, we keep in touch, but this might be our last like real run at it. You know, this might, and that's not entirely true. It's really depends on your group. But for us, it was probably really like the last one. And so everybody's kind of sitting there, you know, smoothie, soda water, other guys go with beers. You know, everybody's trying to figure out like as we're all waiting for the plan the plan and the planes as we go our separate ways. And a guy got in the massage chair and we were like, dude, are you seriously getting in the massage chair? And then he's like, yeah, I am. Fuck you guys. I'm getting in it. And then he got in it and he was like, it was set up that he could look at us while he was doing it. And everybody, right. And everybody thinks he's doing it for like, oh, you're a loser. Like, why are you doing this? And then he does it. And he's like, you guys have no idea. And then we're like making fun of him. We think he's like selling it to us. We're like, this is stupid. And so then like one other guy was like, I'll admit I wanted to try it, but I didn't want to be the first guy that went over and did it. He's like, I may re-up. You may not even get a chance. And then it turned into, come on, dude, share
the
chair.
Let me get
he's
a
like,
turn.
Oh, share the chair. Share the chair now. And then the other guy got in it. And then the first guy was like, you got to get out. Like, give it back. And then it turned into like a different conflict. So I'm just telling you, those things are always empty, but it might be the right call. And shout out to Kyle for having the instinct and lack of fear to do it.
Well, the first time I went back, there was just kind of a bunch of old ladies who needed a seat. Nobody was paying for, there was four chairs and they were all taken by like women who clearly needed to sit down. And
that's the right
call. I went, you know, I let another like hour go by and I was like, let me see if I could, you know, because I looked to see first. I was like, I was going to be crazy. And I was like, I'll actually book a spa massage thing from these airport people. If there's one in this terminal, I will lay down on a table in public and have somebody massage me. That's what I'm going to do right now. But they didn't have that in there. So I was like, all right, the massage chair is a good compromise. I went back. There was one free spot. I sat down. Everyone else in the row was not paying for the chair. And they were like, are you seriously doing it? And it had like a huge speaker on it. So when I put my card in, it's like, choose how much you want. It's like, it's screaming. Everyone's like, oh, this fucking guy's actually fucking paying money. So I don't think I'll do, I don't think I'll
need
do it
to
again.
Announce to the world your intentions.
It's like the loudest speaker. But yeah, I don't know if I do it again, but if I'm ever in that type of shape again, I will.
Okay. No. I like it. All right, let's get to some life advice here.
You want details? Bye. I drive a Ferrari 355 Cabriolet. What's up? I have a ridiculous house in the South Fork. I have every toy you can possibly imagine. And best of all, kids, I am liquid. So, now you know what's possible. Let me tell you what's required.
Life Advice is supported by State Farm. Worried about life's what ifs? State Farm is here to help. They take service seriously with agents available to help you over the phone or in person, or you can get answers to your questions right away using the State Farm app. So no matter what life throws your way, they're there when and how you need them. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Call or go to statefarm.com for a quote today. We did have some technical difficulties with Bob Ryan, so a little shorter pod for you today. So Rudy, we need a jacked baby arms update.
There's no update. I'm not jacked, so like I don't think you know, I it's one of those things too where she's at daycare a lot of the day too, so I'm really holding her in the morning and then I'm holding her at night, and then she goes to bed like 2 hours after we pick her up, so like I'm not really holding her that much right now. Like weekends, definitely a lot more of that situation, and it is like a kind of a pain in the ass because she's, I think she's like 16-17 pounds now. But I usually post up in like a chair somewhere with her and have her sit on my lap kind of thing. So I'm not all arms right now. So check back in like, I don't know, check back over the summer because we're probably doing more outside stuff where, you know, I've got to basically just hold her in one arm. But nothing, no good progress right now.
Are you a baby backpack guy? My buddy asked for a baby backpack. I was like, are you going to wear this, man?
Like it's the like Bjorn
80
thing?
Bucks. I don't know. What is that?
Yeah, like the thing you wear her in.
Yeah, but I mean, this one's like a fucking straight up backpack, and it's like I don't know. I was like, you want me to buy you an $80 backpack for this baby? Are you gonna wear this baby on your back? I don't see.
We actually have one. We have it. It's a front one, so she faces us, mostly my wife.
That's bad, dude.
Not gonna lie, pretty awesome.
No, that's bad. That's bad for her developing relationships if she's not facing towards them.
That's true.
The whole reason for the Bjorn. She's gonna be a total recluse.
It is pretty awesome, though.
Is that what happened, Ryan?
Wait, is Rudy mad at one of us right now?
No, I'm not mad. I'm just saying, like, it's 80 bucks. I see. I don't know. It's Kyle's, one of those things you put on the registry and you're like, I don't know how much this costs. Somebody buy it for me. I don't know.
Right, but you got one that faces you. I'm just saying. And now Kyle's suggesting that I was putting a fucking
backwards facing. It's the new where you dropped on your head as a baby. It's like, hey, did they have you facing backwards, man? What happened?
They put me in a duffel bag.
They just cut out holes in a garbage bag to figure it out.
Threw some fruit roll-ups in there. Can't get out. It's super safe.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
These get older. There's
problem solving
the inside. Yeah. Yeah. Will he ever figure out? He got out when he was 4. Really smart. Doesn't talk to many people. All right. So it's a TBD on the jacked arms.
Yeah. No, I don't think it's going to happen. I'm incapable of being jacked, so it's fine.
No, maybe you're incapable of being dedicated enough to being jacked.
That's true.
All right,
not a Jim Hardo. Sorry.
There's some fucking lasers flying around right now. All right, let's get to the emails. Lifeadvice@gmail.com. Okay, here we go. I love this headline. Am I too old to shoot hoops in the park by myself? Hey, guys, 5'8", 160. No gym stats.
Well, you emailed the perfect podcast.
Yeah, I know. Really. Like, Bob, tell us more about Larry Bird, the book. So, man, I don't know what else is next here. So I have a screenplay. Okay. All right. But I do enjoy running and have completed a few marathons in the last couple of years. All right. Active guy. 5'8", 160. Love it. My family and I recently moved to a new house that has a nice neighborhood park just up the street. The park is a basketball court that so far doesn't seem to get used very often. I made the comment recently to my wife that I should get a new basketball so that I can go shoot some hoops at the park on nice evenings. My wife thought I was joking initially. And then when she realized I was serious, she said it'd be kind of weird for a 35-year-old man to play basketball by himself in the park.
Come on.
Exhale. It's not like I'm going to be working on defensive or dribbling drills. I just want to enjoy shooting some hoops, which is something I haven't done a lot since college. Is my wife right to think it's a weird thing to do? Or am I free to enjoy getting some shots up on a nice summer day? Thanks for helping me settle this debate. Okay, I don't want to be dramatic, but your wife sounds like the worst person I've ever heard of. Like, why would anyone care? First of all, she's wrong. But why would she not want you to do something that, by the way, is completely cost-free? Sounds like something you miss doing, right? That you would like to do. Like, imagine caring enough, like being negative about something else that you want to do in the relationship. And by the way, there are far better examples of being like, I don't know if you should do that. That doesn't sound like a good idea. That was stupid. I'm going to get on your case about this. I'm not going to remember this, or I'm not going to forget this and remember it for the next 12 years because of this that happened. Like, a guy just wants to go outside and get some shots up and she thinks that's weird. She's wrong. She's totally wrong. There's no counter argument to this. There's nothing. So there you go.
Yeah. Not only do I think you should go, Igloo makes this cooler called Cool Tunes, I believe. I just was gifted it for my birthday. I think you throw a couple Heineken Silvers in there, no bitter endings, and enjoy your summer nights. I think you should be the coolest old guy at the park getting up shots, and don't worry about this. She's totally wrong. She's way off. She doesn't know what she's saying. Do what makes you happy. This is super harmless.
You know what's weird, too, is like if you were like, hey, I'm going to go on a hike, she wouldn't say any. She wouldn't bat an eye at that. But like getting shots up is weird, and it's less strain and stress on your body and you enjoy it more. There's a weird stigma between going shooting by yourself, and I don't like it.
Well, it depends what you do when you shoot by yourself. Less strain, so I don't know that I agree with that, but I mean she's obviously not a basketball family. Like, she's looking at it as if you shooting hoops outside at 35 years old by yourself is the equivalent of you saying like, I want to get Legos. So I mean, she's built different in the worst way possible.
I wanted to put up a hoop.
I'm mad.
My neighbor has a hoop in his yard, and it's not his house. It's his parents' house. He's like a younger kid. And I'm kind of jealous. I just watched him shoot hoops outside, and I was like kind of talking to my wife about maybe getting a hoop. But the problem is I don't want other people in the neighborhood to watch me shoot hoops in my driveway because like I am not a young kid anymore. Is that weird? I'm like a little subconscious about just people, like the other families walking by. Like, oh, yeah, there's that guy.
I know. I think it's so great. You could lean into this, throw a headband on, throw on some fucking Van Halen. Put out like two cones and work on your elbow step backs. You know, pretend contact, having to work around it.
Yeah. Just do the 3-2-1 buzzer thing. 10, 9, 8. You just a couple turnaround J.
Kobe. Waiters for three. Jerome Owiso. Never mind. All right, I'm going to shut the fuck up.
Anyway,
all right.
Yep.
Yeah. Once I said Mawiso wrong, it was like, all right, don't even bother. All right. Caddy tipping issue. We'll do three because the interview was a little short today. Okay. Hello, gentlemen. My friends and I are headed to a golf trip this week in a very nice resort in Wisconsin. We're having a debate for which I feel the LA crew is a perfect arbiter. It's an upscale resort. Well, they're going to Sand Valley. So there you go. If that helps any of the golfers listening to this. And the course requires you to walk or have a caddy. This will be our fourth year on the trip with my twin brother and two very close friends. And we'll always have caddies for the 4 or 5 rounds that we play. We've been lucky enough to pair with the same guy for the last 3 years. And he'll be on my bag again this year. The suggested rate for caddies is 100, but I've always tipped him about 150 to 175 per round because he's a great hang and I never play golf with a caddy the rest of the year. I like the guy and I like being generous if I'm in a position to do so. This year, however, my friends asked if we could all agree about how much we were tipping beforehand because we can't have, we'll just use his name here because it's nothing like outrageous here. We can't have Brian being Mr. Popular and one-upping our amounts. I told them I was going to hand my guy 800 at the start of the trip for five rounds, 160 a round for all those English majors out there. got it. Okay. At first, I thought we were talking English majors, and I was like, wait, what? Lynx golf? Now I get it. All right. Carnoustie. And they all collect. Right. They all collectively lost their shit. Good call, Surdy. I trampled that, but that was good.
Nah, you're good.
They apparently want a tip 125 per round. So they lost their shit about $35 extra per round. My question is simple. Does this really fucking matter? I told them they're welcome to tip however much they want. Any issues they have are simply their projection of how it'll be received. I can't help it if they have a complex about this. I've told them I would write y'all and go with whatever you decide. If this is coming too late, editing here, then just know there's going to be a very well-compensated looper in Wisconsin. Looper. Love it. On Tuesday. You're right. Your friends are wrong. Tip less. It doesn't matter. As somebody who, again, the old bartending game of get totally hooked up on drinks and end up paying way more because we all try to overcompensate by tipping each other way more than we normally should, I would tell whoever I was with, I'd be like, I'm going to have to tip more. And they'd be like, all right. Like, I'm not going to ask you, like, hey, what are you putting down? What are you putting down? What are you putting down? I'm going to put down more. And then those guys, like some guys would be like, oh, well, if you put down some or whatever, I would just say, hey, look, put down what you're going to put down and then whatever, go last, especially if it's on like four separate checks. There's nothing going to be done. All right. On that one, you're going to have the same caddy, what, for the fourth year, I think. You like them. You built up some rapport. The thing that's even dumber about this is it's not like it's your neighborhood bar where you're Mr. Big Shot by being the big tipper out of the group and trying to like gain some credit with people that you're going to continue to interact with. You see these people once a year. The rest of the caddies are going to forget the other guys the entire time. And they're not going to be thinking about them for a year going, oh, those are the three guys that paid $35 less per round. I remember them. They're not going to care because you know what? They're still making good money. You decide to go above and beyond. That's their hang up. That's their problem. So I wouldn't feel bad. And hopefully you take care of your guy. If you, like you said, are in a position to do so, you know, tip what you can. You know, show some sort of appreciation, but this resentment towards other people that want to step up and take care of people is fucking stupid.
It says, when has a group of guys ever cared about feelings? Like, usually guys are always just like, oh, shut the fuck up, whatever. This is one of those situations where you should be like, hey, man, shut the fuck up. Tip what you're going to tip. I'll tip what I tip. If you can sleep at night, that's great. I think that's fine. I think that's awesome. Some people are really strange about the tip or extra money in any sort of situation. Like, remember I told you we had 13 dudes at the bachelor party. The guy who was in charge invited my buddy's brother, who like I've known for a while, but like doesn't really know everybody in this group, because if he didn't come, they were going to have to each pay an extra $35 was the number. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, we're going to squeeze one more guy onto a couch because you're like afraid that everyone else was going to have to pay $35 extra. So, I mean, some people's brains actually work like that and other people's were, you know, don't. So I don't think you can convince anybody to change their ways. So I just say, hey man, if you can sleep at night tipping that, go ahead. I'm sleeping just fine these days.
those are like fight words though.
Yeah, that seems a little harsh.
It's guys, right? You're guys. That's what I mean. Like, you're allowed to be a little harsh on each other.
I don't have much to add. I just feel like you have an awesome relationship with this guy and you want to hook him up. That's great. That's not weird at all. And doesn't really make the other guys look bad. You know, this particular caddy, and I don't know, like, It doesn't feel like it's the guys are tweeting the other guys drastically less. It's just, you know, figure out what if they tip what the average going rate is, I don't think we have a problem here. And then everybody knows that this guy and that caddy just know each other. Unless the other guys have a relationship with the other caddies too, maybe it's a little bit weird because maybe they're like, hey, like, I thought we had a good time too, and you're tipping this guy $30 a day less. I don't know. But it doesn't seem like that's the case. It seems like the other guys are getting random caddies. And that's fine. They should get whatever like the regular rate is. You're giving your buddy the welcome back rate, essentially.
Totally.
Yeah, I mean, unless the pushback is the initial thing, the pushback was them going, are you serious? Like, I think that might have been what started the argument, would be him going, hey, I'm going 800 for the five rounds or whatever, right? And they're like, dude, what the fuck? Like, it actually adds up. Now we're talking to other extra 150. What he should do is, no, you guys do what you want to do, right? Because I can understand that part of it, especially if they're like, look, we're already tipping a really good number here. I think $100 for a caddy for the round is probably pretty good. That would be my guess.
Yeah.
I don't think that's like bad. I've only played with a caddy once ever, and it was at somebody else's course. And he was kind of just, we just went out, three of us, and like, we didn't even play a full 18. It was just, the guy was kind of with us because we were screwing around. So like, and by the way, I wasn't paying greens fees. I was a friend of the guy that was the member. The member just wanted me to come out and bullshit for a little while. So I can't even speak to the experience of it. So I'm not a resource on this at all. But when it comes to the tipping part, you may have lost them in the proposal that you were suggesting that everybody pay the same amount. And if you were pushy about it, then I don't blame them for wanting to push back. Especially, you know, some guys just don't want to have to tip like an absurd amount of money, which I totally understand. So what it should be coming down to is, well, wait, the other part of the email was they said that they all want to be on the same page because Brian tries to be the hero. I don't know. Now I've become bored of suggesting of me breaking this whole thing down. We already know the answer.
Yeah,
you tip what you want. Right, right.
It's not even like it's not like you're the one guy tipping less. There's three other guys tipping the same, and it's an appropriate amount. You're fine.
All right. Okay. Speaking of money, bartender makes me pay twice. 29 years old, 6'5", 235, mid-range game like a playground Sean Livingston after the knee injury, I imagine. Sean Livingston before the knee injury was going to be so nasty. Mm-hmm. Anyway, speaks to how good he was. He still was that good after the devastating injuries. All right. Huge fan of the show. Been listening since SVP and Russillo. Need to know if I handle the situation correctly or if I get taken advantage of. Last week, my best friend, let's call him Mike, turned 30 years old. Mike and his wife, Sarah, live in a different city. So a bunch of our friends and I went to his town to celebrate. Sarah hosted a 30th birthday party for Mike at their local bowling alley. Coincidentally, a 7-year-old birthday happened to be in the next lane. So fun for all ages. Okay. Sarah hosted the birthday party at the bowling alley because their family friends owned it. All right. But here was the situation. There was a bar in the bowling alley. We bought beer pitchers. I opened a tab and put about $100 worth of pitchers on the tab. Nothing outrageous. At the end of the party, I went to the bar to close my tab. I handed the bartender my card. And after about 30 seconds, he returned to me saying there was some sort of error on it and I needed to give him another card. Now, I'm not saying I'm killing it. And there have been times in my early 20s where I'd be sweating out praying the card would not get declined. Brother, don't you know it?
That's a sport.
Yeah, I had my car declined at bottle service at Marquee once. That was a good time.
Jesus.
After I'd gotten the waitress's number.
Just barely? Was it like just almost enough? And like one of those recurring charges?
She's like, your car got declined. I was like, oh, it must have been, I'm moving money around. It happens all the time. Moving money around. Fucking loser. Anyway. Like, hey, you talk to that guy's car got declined? Yeah. It's fucking really cool. Anyway, I opened a tab. All right, whatever. Okay, so I'm not saying I'm killing it, right? I'd be sweating and praying the card would not get declined, but luckily a $100 tab will not be an issue at this point in my life. I know, badass.
Nice.
Good sense of humor about it all.
No, this guy's great. So happily, I give him the other card. But before he runs that card, out of curiosity, I pull up my bank account on my mobile app to see if, and it got flagged. All right. To see if it got flagged. Not only had it not been flagged, but my card had been charged. I did a bad job explaining this. I apologize to listeners. All right. So he looks at the app, wants to see if something's flagged, you know, because that'll happen, right? There'll be some fraud alert. Did you just do this? You have to text back yes or whatever. All right. So it's not flagged, but then he sees on the app that $100 charge has just gone through. So at this point, I'm a little drunk, but still being over polite. I tell the bartender that it looks like my card was charged. I show him my mobile app and he suddenly gets very hostile with me, telling me he can't trust my mobile app, that he's not going to get stuck with this tab and that it's not his problem, even if we're friends with the owners. He brought up the friends with the owners. How would I have hacked my mobile app to put this in the fake charge? He actually asks him, how could I have done this? He gets more upset. So I finally hand him a different card and pay the tab again. The guy was such a jerk about it that's been bugging me for a week now. Would you have done anything differently or chalk it up to the game and be happy we had a great time celebrating with my buddy? I know there's a few times here and there, both you know, without any money and then certainly not worrying about my electricity being turned off at this stage of my life, where I can be a little flippant at times with like, dude, it's $20. Like, what do you, like, seriously? Like, do you want to go to war over this shit? Like, if you don't even like this person, it's kind of the Bronx Tale rule. It's like, you don't even like that guy, right? Like, now he's out of your life because he owes you some money. You're going to go fucking crazy for what, $10 or $20 that you owed C? So This is different, though. I'm not going to be dismissive. This guy fucked up. And bartenders, despite the number of times that this can happen. Oh, I gave you this. You know, when you get a 20 back in the day when people paid with cash, you put a 20 on the top of the register, you give them the change first, you hand them back the change, then you put the 20 in the drawer so that you could always point to the 20, right? Or you did 10 and somebody said it was a 20, especially when you were in college bars, guys were trying to pull shit all the time, right? And some bartenders would be like lunatics about it. And if you're on top of your game, like, fucking up the register is not something you can be doing a lot and become a good bartender. But if you're on top of your game, every now and then you might be like, all right, cool, you know, whatever. And then depending on where you would work, when they did the drawer, if they were light, you know, they would make you. There's places I've worked where the policy would be whatever you are light, the bartenders are covering it. The bartenders are covering it. And that's what he's referencing here. I have a hard time believing it would be a bowling alley. Wouldn't be a little bit more relaxed about it? Because there's times where stuff just does get fucked up. And I know the touchscreen stuff is all different now. I remember when I first started using it at the bar that I was at in Boston. And then, you know, next day, because I was like the new guy, anytime there was a fuck up, they would just all blame me. And then the guy would call and be like, we need you to be better on this and you're going to have to pay. And I was like, whatever. It was also the most fucked up place I bartended because they would count the tips downstairs with just one bartender and one of the other ones while everybody else waited around. I've never, ever experienced that in my life.
Like, and it's fucking we own this city. Those guys right, in their house just stuffing their fucking their jackets.
All right. So back to answering this instead of another fucking boring story from my past. I would go back 100% and go, look, I'm going to be cool about it. Be like, I know. And the reason I actually bring up a lot of this stuff is that the bartenders, there's a really good chance he didn't fuck it up and that he didn't scam you. But there's so many attempts to scam him that he doesn't trust anybody. And it's weird that he brought up the friend thing of the family as if he already was pissed off and already had animosity. So maybe he was trying to fuck you. His defense of the mobile app transaction is if you hacked it like fucking Matthew Broderick here, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah, that's insane too. So that you might be dealing with like a real loser and you might not even want to deal with again. But the thing is like any bartender that actually cares about being, and I'm not talking about being great, I'm talking about being decent, is that if you were to go up to the bar, but you may have to go manager on this one, although you don't live there anymore. So that's another fucking problem. Well, you could call the manager and go, hey, here's the deal. I was in there and be nice about it. It was busy. It wasn't busy, whatever. Hey, he was busy. I knew my card had gotten charged. He didn't believe me, which I understand. But not only did it get charged, he charged me again for the same tab. Is there a way I can email you the PDFs, the screen grabs of my phone to show it to you and then have them give you fucking $100 back and reverse the charge? It's super easy. It happens all the time. I know it's a bit challenging because you can't just walk down the street. And, you know, as far as that guy, you're never going to deal with him again. So like you want to call him? Like I just wouldn't deal with him because there's also another version of a bartender who's never, ever wrong, ever. And even though this guy's totally wrong and you're going to present him with the evidence like you already did, if you're dealing with him directly. So I wouldn't go friends of the family. There clearly has to be a manager because, yeah, I think the principle of that $100 and having that guy feel like either he got over on you or was dumb enough not to realize that nobody'd hacked the phone. The $100 would bother me a little bit, but I think there's some ways to. I think there's recourse here for you, which doesn't involve having him go back to this town for a weekend or dealing with this dude again.
Yeah, there was two things he said was basically, I don't give a shit if you're like, you know, buddies with the owners. Or
that's weird, right?
And I can't trust your mobile app. Like I've been in there before where it's like, hey, it says you charged me and you didn't. He's like, hey, man, just trust me. You know, in 48 hours, it will reverse. I promise. Like that would have been enough for me to be like, all right, okay. But like the whole like, I can't trust what you're showing me there is like, okay. So, and I'm a guy who realizes after doing certain things like, you know, signing up for pre-check, doing shit at the DMV, like this shit isn't actually as hard as I thought it was. You know, the shit that you really don't want to do. So in this situation, I would have went screenshots, printouts, dispute charge, and then just see if I can get that taken care of without even having to come back. But I would have just done all the things because as I've gotten older, it's actually much easier to do these shits that you're like, I really don't want to do this. It's actually find out it's not that hard. So, yeah, I would have screenshotted both charges like, OK, why would I have two identical charges on the same night if I'm not telling the truth? Printouts just so I could have it. And then, you know, sometimes in a lot of the credit card apps, you can just dispute the charge and they'll be like, OK. And if not, you've got all that stuff. I definitely would be addressing this. And if not only because of the way the two things that guy said that would have definitely made me see this through to the end. So yeah, totally handle this. Make a call once you have all your shit together instead of them being like, all right, well then, you know, get your stuff and have them call me. Like, do all that stuff first before you call. See if you can just handle this shit through your credit card company.
That's the thing. I'm not trying to be a dick, but, and you guys can tell me if I'm wrong or not because you have more experience in this arena, but like, is the bartender at the bowling alley that's also doing kids' birthday parties like the best bartender? Like, is that a guy that you think is like super buttoned up? I don't know. Maybe he is. I have my doubts. So I think it's what Kyle said. It's pretty easy. Like, just dispute the charge. Like, call the manager, call the bowling alley back. You know a person. It should be pretty easy to get reversed. This isn't a chalk it up to the game situation, though. Like, that guy is likely wrong, and you have the proof, and it's $100. There's no way that you're just going to take the L on that.
And he was a dick, which was the cherry on top.
And he's a dick. Yep.
It's a fair point by Cerruti. I've never seen an episode of Bar Rescue where John Taffer introduces his expert mixologist as Ralph from Sizzler's Lanes out of Mizzou.
There's likely a couple people that just got offended, but yeah, that's all right.
Listen, I'm sure there are some great.
Like, why aren't we doing more drafts? Like, drafts.
I love a bowling alley bar.
What the fuck is this? Cran? What? Just Johnny's like, I think I just, you got to go drafts on drafts on drafts. What's the issue? Yeah, you know, Steve, there could be a couple bowling bartenders that'll hear this pod and fucking despise you for the rest of your life. No. But I do think that it's at least a conversation point.
Right? Bowling alley bartenders and pilots. You're really racking up the enemies, dude.
All right. Like, if there wasn't also a kid's birth, like, there are those adult bowling alleys that are sick and they have awesome bars. And I'm sure they're like, you have, you know, it's probably a tough
scene. Dude, Lucky Strike. Met my wife there.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. I don't know that kids' birthday party bar is the one I'm talking about, but hey, man, maybe I'm wrong.
Hey, I don't care that you're friends with the owners. You hacked your phone. This guy, I don't know that anybody should be defending him here.
Yeah, correct.
So we'll probably have a bowling alley bartender just be like, this guy does not represent us, you know? So.
Oh, what's that? Like TD? God, I can't trust TD Bank. No. Don't trust the technology.
Chase yeah, or right. Nothing.
Oh, what do you got? One of the maps? Oh, yeah. Those tell the truth.
Bring me some paper. Bring me some real paper. Business is still done on paper.
I know. Limitless paper in a paperless world. All right. Life advice has been brought to you by State Farm. Prepare yourself for life's what ifs with State Farm. When you need to move quickly, get in touch with an agent right away using the State Farm app. And for those more complicated situations, they have agents in the field ready to answer your questions in real life. Just call up your agent or head into your local State Farm office for a more personal touch. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Call or go to statefarm.com for a quote today. That's life advice. Thanks to Kyle. Thanks to Steve. Thanks to Chicago. And we're out of here. We'll be back on Sunday with Bill and I, the Ryan Russillo Podcast, Ringer Spotify.